The Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee for Tuesday, May 12th, and we'll start with a public hearing on House Bill 2462.
Yeah. Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 2462, for the record, has a no revenue impact or no fiscal impact statement, provides that veterinarian or veterinarian technician acting within the scope of their license is not a pesticide user subject to the pesticide reporting system.
Okay, and I see Representative Roblin is here, and do we want to have Mr. Kels? You're going to have to help me here. Can't read his handwriting.
Yeah. He would like to be here, too.
Somebody from the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative, welcome back.
Yes,
it's
great
to be here.
Your bill passed today on the Senate floor.
Yes, that's nice, too.
Yeah.
Well,
right over there.
Take them. Yeah. For the record, my name is Arnie Roblin. I'm a representative from House District 9. And it's fun in this business, having been from education, to talk about the small PERS and the big PERS and all the other PERS. This is really a PERS bill in the small sense, pesticide use reporting system, which I support. I think it's important to have the information and the knowledge about what we're putting on. But whenever we pass bills, all of us, every once in a while, unintended consequences come about that I think don't really give us information that's going to be helpful and get in ways of the people who are doing the work that they're doing. And that takes place with veterinarians. As the chair of Ag and Natural Resources, the interim and last session, we had the opportunity to meet and talk with different kinds of people who provide the food and take care of our animals and all of those things. And so when this bill came to me, it was really from the board asking, would you consider this? And I said, I would be happy to. This bill basically says there are certain pesticide uses that veterinarians do in their offices and sometimes on the farm where they apply a pesticide that's in the list of things that need to be reported directly to the skin or the feet or in pill form to an animal. So example might be Frontline for most of our pets. When you put that on the back of in the nape of the neck for a dog, when the veterinarian sells it, and when other people sell it, is not listed as a thing that needs to be reported. But if the doctor, the veterinarian, or in the office applies it, it becomes one of the records that they need to keep, and at the end of the year, they need to make sure that they electronically send. What we also found is a number of them had difficulty getting the electronic thing to work, and so they spent lots of time and effort trying to put in very small amounts of this pesticide that were being applied in their office to dogs that may be going all sorts of places, so it had no relationship to the place in which the dog was going to reside, or the other pet. They also do applications to large animals, horses and cattle, oftentimes at the farm, but in very small doses and in places where it's going to be absorbed in the skin directly into the cattle to take care of some kind of an ailment, or in pill form. And again, it's not going to be come out the same as if you're spraying it on the fields or doing other kinds of things. And so getting that information out and around. And if they sell it to the farmer who applies it, I'm not sure that that one counts necessarily the same way as if the veterinarian has to apply it. So our feeling was in this bill, it's a simple bill, makes sense. We're talking about very small quantities that are being applied as a physician would to a patient, and I think they should be exempt. We really didn't get much testimony opposing this bill in the House side, and I think most people recognize that it makes sense. There was one comment that was made that, well, you know, it's hard to start making exceptions now when we do some things. I think this is one of those exceptions that makes sense, and it really, the minute amounts they're putting on animals are not going to show up in any of the studies anyway. So I think it's a good explanation. We also have some people here who have to actually do this, and they can give you and answer some questions, but I'm willing to answer any questions you might have as well.
Okay, great. Are there any questions for the representative? Oh, all right, thank you. And can you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Thomas Keck. I'm a practicing veterinarian at the Dallas Animal Clinic just over the river in Dallas, Oregon. I'm also a past president of the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, and we come here in support of House Bill 2462. This is a bill that is very logical. These products should never have been included in the original PERS bill. The application done by veterinarians is done in such a way that there is minimal of any environmental exposure, as which was the PERS law that you originally passed. Public safety is always a concern of veterinarians, and we handle these products very, very consistently and very, very safely. Not only that, like we've just heard, micro amounts of this material are being used in veterinary practices, and so it's in the best interest of everybody involved and not have to be reporting. It has become a little bit of a nightmare for a lot of veterinarians to try to do this reporting. I've done it. It takes hours to just get through the system that is actually designed not for reporting these micro amounts, but designed for reporting gallons upon gallons of pesticides. So I think from the standpoint of safety, there's no need for it, and it's just another bureaucracy that we can do without. And if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer them.
Thank you. Any questions? I know you just came in. Senator Boquist.
Just one quick question, since I have to fill out the electronic forms, too. I'm just curious, as a veterinarian, do you use the location of the veterinarian office, or do you use the location of where you treated the animal if it's animals in the field?
G-O-K. God only knows.
Okay. That's what I thought the answer was.
No, it's extremely confusing. Right. Or how about, in the parking lot versus in the practice. That's been a problem.
Okay. All right. Any other questions, Senator? All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing this bill forward. Anybody else that would like to testify? We don't have anybody else signed up on House Bill 2462. No? Okay. So we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2462. Make a motion? Go for it. Oh, sorry. Thank you. We'll open up a work session on House Bill 2462.
Move House Bill 2462 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Heck, is that right?
Yeah.
Still are. Moves that House Bill 2462 be reported out of committee with the due pass recommendation. And is there any discussion? Any objections? Okay, seeing none. And note that Representative Hass is excused. The motion carries, and would you like to carry the bill?
Would be delighted.
Okay. Senator Atkinson is going to carry the bill. And before I drop the gavel, would
yes.
Representative Hass, or Senator Hass, would like to vote on?
I think he just said aye.
I think he did say aye. Do you know what we're voting on?
Yes, I do.
Okay. House Bill 2462, so you can note that Senator Hass, is in aye. So with that, it's unanimous. We have Senator Atkinson carrying the bill, and I would close the work session on House Bill 2462. Just in the nick of time. Next, I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 3043.
Madam Chair and committee members, Senate Bill 3043A. For the record, there's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact on this bill. It extends the Metropolitan Service District jurisdiction to urban growth boundary automatically upon expansion of the urban growth boundary.
Okay, and it looks like we have Metro up to talk about the bill. Do we have any other sign-ups? Okay, so Metro. Okay, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Richard Banner for Metro. The bill that you have in front of you, House Bill 3043, deals with district boundaries in the metro area. There are two things that the bill does. Let me talk about the first one. Metro itself has two kinds of boundaries. You probably know this. We have an urban growth boundary, and we have a district boundary because we're a special district. The two boundaries are different. They're independent and separate from one another. When we expand our urban growth boundary, as we have many times since 1979, on occasion we bring territory into the urban growth boundary lies outside our jurisdictional boundary. And that creates a couple of problems for us. One is that the people who own the property or live on the property who come into the UGB but are not in our district don't get to vote on Metro things. For example, they don't get to participate in elections of Metro councilors. If there's some sort of measure on the ballot, they don't get to vote for those. and they really don't have a direct voice then in metro activities, and metro activities can have significant effects on their properties once it comes into the urban growth boundary and gets urbanized. Second problem is that if the land is inside our urban growth boundary but it is not within our jurisdictional boundary, the portions of our regional framework plan that guide development and growth and facilitate it don't apply to those lands. So House Bill 3043 would amend our statute, which is Chapter 268 in Oregon Revised Statutes, and say that when our urban growth boundary is amended to expand onto territory, if that territory does not previously lie within the metro district boundary, it then comes into the district boundary too. So the effects of that match the problems and resolve the problems. So when people come into the boundary, then they can participate in metro affairs, they can vote on elections, and Metro's regional framework plan would apply to those lands. The second problem has to do with the boundaries of other districts. Some of you may remember when there used to be boundary commissions around the state, a small handful of them. There was one in the Portland metro area. At the time Metro was established, questions began to arise about whether there ought to be a metro and a local government boundary commission. It took quite a while to sort that out, but ultimately, in the 90s, the legislature abolished the boundary commission in our area and transferred the responsibility to regulate boundaries of service districts and count in cities to Metro. So much of that authority from the boundary commissions was transferred to Metro. That happened in the 90s. At the time that that happened, the jurisdictional authority that used to be the boundary commissions, which was the whole three counties, retreated to the Metro district boundary, with one exception. We had urban reserves on the books at that time, adopted by Metro in the mid-90s, and the legislature thought that it would make good sense to give Metro authority over boundary changes of districts, not just within its own jurisdictional boundary, but urban reserves as well. Interestingly, that legislation said the urban reserves that were in effect at that time. You may remember that there were a lot of people unhappy with those urban reserves. They were appealed to LUBA, they were appealed to the Court of Appeals, and they were ultimately declared invalid. So those urban reserves went away. But because the statute said those urban reserves, our jurisdiction continues to extend to those lands, even though they are no longer urban reserves. So what the second change does is it fixes that problem and says our authority does not extend to those lands that are no longer urban reserves, but if we do designate urban reserves, then jurisdiction over district boundaries would extend to the new urban reserves. So I think you may remember from last session, or you've certainly heard about Senate Bill 1011 and the urban and rural reserves process that were enabled by that legislation from last session. It's well underway. Four local governments in the region, that is Metro and three counties, are working together to try to designate urban and rural reserves. We think we're about a year and a half into it. We think we will designate urban reserves within the next 6 months. If that happens, then under the amendment to this bill, Metro's authority over district boundary changes would extend to those urban reserves. So those are the two things that are accomplished by this bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Actually, I wanted to make sure. So this is prospective. Is it? It's not retroactive.
It is prospective only. When the House was in front, when the bill was in front of the House, it had been drafted to make it retroactive. That was not our doing. That was legislative counsel that did that. And the House committee amended the bill to take that out. So it is prospective only.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Okay. All right. And is there anybody else? Thank you. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on this bill, House Bill 3043A? Okay. Seeing none, We'll close the public hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Go for it. And I'll open up a work session on House Bill 3043A.
Sure. I'd move House Bill 3043A to the floor of the State House for recommendation and recommend that Senator Hass carry it.
Too late to, if not, I can. Okay. I was going to give him another bill, so I will probably carry the bill. There's a motion made by Senator Atkinson to adopt House Bill 3043A with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Okay, seeing none, motion carries, and actually I will carry the bill. So with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3043A. Don't worry, you'll get another one. And we will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2182A.
Madam Chair and committee members.
Oh, yes, is that right? 2082.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm opening up a public hearing on House Bill 2082A.
Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 2082A, for the record, there's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact, no statement issued. It updates and clarifies Soil and Water Conservation District authorizing statutes to reflect current practices and conditions and concerns.
Okay. And we have Gary Whitney. Welcome, Gary.
Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gary Whitney, Executive Director of the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts in Salem, Oregon. And we appreciate this opportunity to speak with you very briefly this afternoon in support of House Bill 2082A. This bill is a housekeeping and cleanup measure for the authorizing statutes of Soil and Water Conservation Districts, which are units of local government, as you know. And I can be very brief and hit on just a couple of high points or go through more detail. Sounds like brief is better.
Points is good.
Okay.
We're going to lose people.
We can always ask questions.
At 4:30, yes,
okay.
And we will ask some clarifying questions if we need to.
I just wanted to direct you to the handout here. This cover page is the written testimony of our President, John McDonald, who couldn't be here today due to medical issues, but has some detail about the bill there. And the backup to that is the summary by point-by-point summary that I think I shared with each of you when we met earlier, or your delegate of your office. Like most housekeeping and cleanup measures, I think there's kind of three components to the bill. There's deleting the old and clarifying the new, and things that the lawyers and legislative council like to do to make things modern and format right. Just a quick example of a clarification of something that's come up in Soil and Water Conservation District world recently is districts that now have taxing authority locally. And to the extent that they might want to merge with a local district that doesn't have taxing authority, there's constitutional guidance on that provision, but nothing in statute. So we wanted to add something to the statute that complements the constitutional authority so districts have a place to look should that situation arise in the future. And I can stop there and take questions.
Okay. Any questions? Looks like Senator Hass has one.
Thank you. What's a common reason for the written request for referendum, or what are the problems? Is it logistics? Is it unhappiness? Or what's when this happens?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hass, I don't think I'm clear on what kind of referendum you might be referring to. You know, districts have referendums to elect district directors, and there might be some boundary changes. And what we try to do with this bill is to streamline the need for referendums so that if it's not controversial at the local level, we'll have a public hearing. We'll determine if it's not controversial, then avoid the expense of a referendum. If there is some controversy at the local level, then by all means, let's have a referendum. Let's hear from the voters. And
I was just wondering how often that situation arises.
You know what? We have the state's authority on soil and water conservation districts in the audience, and I hope you'll come up here and clarify me if I'm wrong, but I don't think it comes up very often.
Okay. I don't know who that is, but is it Larry?
That's Larry,
back there? Yeah. Nodding your head? Okay.
Is it up and down or sideways?
He said he agrees.
Yeah, right.
And now Larry Oyo is with the Department of Agriculture, so we can bring him up if there's any additional questions.
Right.
I've been to my office.
Okay. Any other questions?
No.
All right. Looks like you've done a lot of work on this bill.
Thank you.
So we appreciate that. Okay. So does anybody else like to testify? We did get a letter from the Cattlemen Association. Is Jim here? I don't see him. Yeah, in support of the bill. So anybody else like to come up and testify on this bill? Okay, we're moving right along here. Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on Senate or House Bill 2082A, and I will open up a work session on House Bill 2082A.
Madam Chair, I'd move House Bill 2082A to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Atkinson moves House Bill 2082A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Okay, seeing none, motion carries. And Senator Boquist, would you like to carry the bill?
Delighted, Madam Chair.
Okay.
I don't know if I have to take one.
I mean, it's an important bill, so appreciate it. With that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2082A. And I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2182A.
Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 2182A, for the record, there's a no revenue impact, and a fiscal statement was issued on this bill. Just also, just to bring your attention, there is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay.
Expands the eligibility of alternative fuel projects to use the Department of Energy's small-scale energy loan program. Expands eligibility from vehicle fleets and fueling facilities to include other kinds of equipment fueled by alternative energy sources. Increases the term of service for members of the CELT program committee for 2 years. From 2 years to 4 years.
Okay. Thank you. And we have Jeff Keto from the Department of Energy.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Keto. I'm Assistant Director of the Department of Energy, and I do manage the Energy Loan Program. Very briefly, what this bill does is it catches up the Energy Loan Program a little bit with some of the legislative changes that were made in 2007 in the renewable fuels area. With passage of renewable fuel standards and some tax credits on biomass feedstock that is grown in Oregon, the loan program statute hadn't been changed in this area for a while, and there's a couple of things that it does. One of the things specifically is currently it defines an alternative fuel project as a fleet of vehicles or a fueling stations, and what we're doing is expanding that to include equipment or the vehicles, but excluding individual private vehicles. We don't want to get into the auto finance arena. And also what it does is it helps look at equipment other than fueling stations that might be used, especially in rural areas and in wood products, use of forest residue that will be used as feedstocks for alternative fuel. As an additional item, it extends the term of our advisory committee members from 2 years to 4 years, and all the committee members are in favor of that. In fact, currently they serve multiple terms because of the expertise needed on the committee and the work that they do enjoy. With that, that's the end of my testimony. We're very much in favor of this bill, and I'm open for any questions.
Okay, questions for Mr. Keto? I do have one question. Does this actually staff can clarify, did this go to the floor and it didn't go to Ways and Means originally?
Correct.
Okay, so can you talk about, was there discussion about the fiscal impact on the other side and why it was typically goes to the policy committee and then it's sent to Ways and Means? So was there any discussion about the impact, fiscal impact?
Chair Dingfelder and member of the committee. There was minimal discussion on the fiscal impact to the extent that the fiscal impact is based on simply our additional loans that we're making, and the loans are self-supporting to pay for the costs that are associated with those items in the fiscal impact. So other than that comment, there wasn't anything specifically discussed on the fiscal impact.
Okay, so this is in this Department of Energy, so obviously it'll come down to the subcommittee that I serve on. And so it's more of a, just an expenditure limitation since this is other funds.
Senator Chair Dingfelder, correct. What it does, it simply recognizes the hope that there'll be additional loan activity in these areas, and it basically itemizes what that loan activity is, but these are in other funds, and most of it is non-limited.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Senator Boquist has a question.
And I'm not sure you may not answer, and Beth might have an answer, but I'm looking at this. I would assume that even though it's other funds, it still falls under Oregon's bond limitation, so bonding authority would be taken up with the $10 million bond issue.
Do you want to answer that?
Or we just let Ways and Means worry about that?
Okay, well, if we know the answer.
Chair Dingfelder and Senator Boquist, you are correct. It does use bonding authority. We are not asking for any increase in bonding authority that currently exists in the, I believe it's Senate Bill 5505, the bond bill, which is $125 million that is currently allocated. We haven't used our limitation in the past, the full limitation, and so we're not asking for any additional. But it would purportedly require or use up some of that bond authority that we would have, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. All right, we have also Trevor Steele would like to come up and give testimony. Thank you, Mr. Cato.
Thank you.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, I will be very brief. Trevor Steele, representing Arcimoto Electric Vehicles, based in Eugene. We are very supportive of this bill. The one concern that we have is just with the definition of vehicles. We want to make sure that definition and that this gets on record, that we would hope that the Department of Energy in their rulemaking would make sure that the definition does include three-wheeled vehicles, which is what we're currently developing down in Eugene. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. And this would be done, as you mentioned, through rulemaking, and I see the shaking of the head there. Okay, any questions? We're not going to let you off that easy.
Oh,
any questions? I thought you might want to ask your constituent a question there. All right, thank you. All right. So with that, I'm going to close. Does anybody else like to testify in this bill before I close the public hearing? All right. So I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2182A. Are you willing to refer to Ways and Means? Okay. Yes, I will. I'm just waiting to see if he was going outside. We'll open up a work session on House Bill 2182A.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2182A be reported out of the committee with the due pass recommendation and the bill be referred to the committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, Senator Atkinson moves that House Bill 2182A be reported out of committee with due pass recommendation and the bill be referred to the committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Senator Boquist?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since you're downstairs or wherever that committee, those people are.
Yes, it's in the basement.
No. Right. I would point out one of the things that Ways and Means should look at down there is that they've used $57 million of their $150 million authority, and Ways and Means should review it to make sure that we don't use up authority, that we don't want to allocate authority in the bond programs that we're not going to utilize because it causes a higher rate of interest for the state. So I just happen to note that here.
I will certainly note that and bring that up when the bill comes up for a hearing downstairs. Thank you for that observation. Any other comments, questions? Okay. So with that, any objections? So the motion carries, and the bill will be referred to Ways and Means, so we won't have a carrier at this point. With that, close the work session on House Bill 2182A. And moving right along, we'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2671A.
Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 2671A, just for the record, there's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact on the bill, clarifies that the Metropolitan Service Districts may use money collected by the district as service or user fees for solid waste disposal for activities of regional concern that are directly related to reducing the environmental impact from the generation, collection, transportation, processing, and disposal of solid waste. Also, you have an amendment in front of you that would apply an emergency clause to the Act. And also, for the record, there's a no revenue or fiscal impact on the Dash 2 amendment.
Okay. Welcome. Whoever would like to go first.
Thank you, Chair Dinkfelder, committee members. I'm Scott Robinson, the Deputy COO for Metro Regional Government, and I'm happy to be here today to speak briefly in favor of you acting upon House Bill 2671A. If I could, this is a bit of a story I'd like to tell of a good deed that does indeed go punished, if you will. And it's one in which has a little bit of history to it. So I'd just briefly like to give you a sense of the background, the importance of the legislation, and a sense of timing, why there's some importance to its passage. First and foremost, just for a bit of background, Metro Regional Government provides management services for the Regional Solid Waste Management System and has for the last 30 years, works very collaboratively with both the public stakeholders as well as private industry to help manage that regional collection system and ultimately the landfilling as well as then the recovery of materials for purposes of meeting ORS regulations. In doing that, in performing that function, we serve largely, if you will, as a wholesaler. So that traditional service you think of at the curbside is not something Metro does. We serve in the transfer of materials ultimately to landfills as well as regulation of transfer of materials ultimately to landfills. The local jurisdictions then have responsibility for what happens at the curbside and the local haulers and the regulation of those local haulers. We have, again, worked collaboratively over the last 30 years to develop a healthy system. That's one in which it's well-balanced between both public and private. It is one in which we have an actively engaged set of stakeholders, again, public and private, in making sure that policy decisions are thoughtful and serve the public interest, as well as make sure that we have a healthy regional collection system. In more recent planning efforts, specifically in creating a new regional solid waste management plan going forward and looking in forward to the next 10 years, we engaged again in a series of collaborative efforts to define what that system ought look like, and then specifically as part of that, we identified a series of sustainable operations practices that both private industry as well as the public stakeholders believe to be important to the success of the regional solid waste system going forward. In doing that, we identified a chapter of that plan that specifically identified initiatives that we would like to undertake as an industry, if you will, both public and private. In looking at the highest priority of those initiatives, we identified a diesel retrofit program. Very simply, it would retrofit existing diesel equipment, the local haulers, with equipment that would reduce particulate emissions, therefore rendering air obviously more environmentally beneficial and sound. In evaluating that proposal, we got to consensus again with private haulers, the public stakeholders, the local jurisdictions, and ourselves. We all supported that particular initiative, and in moving it forward to finality, identified internal to Metro through our legal counsel representation a concern about the degree to which we were able to use solid waste funds according to ORS 459335. To actually fund the retrofit of equipment in private haulers on private haulers' equipment, that was potentially not sufficiently related to Metro's wholesale activity, and therefore was something that it was not clear that we had the ability to do under current ORS regulations. So before you is revised language that we have worked, again, judiciously with both private haulers as well as the public stakeholders to bring forward to you. This clarifies the use of funds. It broadens the use of funds in a way that through the committee process as well as the House process, we were able to get to consensus again with private industry in terms of this language that's before you. From a timing perspective, I just want to reiterate or let you know that there is some sensitivity to this particular piece of legislation in that we have the ability to access some federal stimulus dollars through the EPA. We have applied for a substantial grant to the amount of $3 million that would retrofit 450 vehicles. The legislation allows us to make the matching commitment for that particular grant through the solid waste funding mechanism. Without it, we would not have that ability to access that particular funding stream. So the difference, what it means to us is we are expecting a grant award as early as June of this year. It would mean without an emergency clause addition that we would be unable to do anything with that grant until January 1st of 2010. So we're hoping to insert that particular emergency clause language in to move that forward.
Okay. All right.
With that, that's my story, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
I'm sticking to it.
Mm-hmm. Randy, did you want to add anything, or you're just here for...
Madam Chair, I'm mainly eye candy. Yes. Thank you. And if there were any questions that I could help to answer.
Yeah, and you might as well state your name.
I'm Randy Tucker. I'm Metro's Legislative Affairs Manager. And, yes, I guess the one thing I would like to add is that we worked this bill over on the House side. There was some concerns early on. We came to agreement, and the bill came out on that side without any opposition out of committee. And Holly Sears said I could mention her name as being someone who's in support of the bill on behalf of Aura, but doesn't need to come up and testify. And I'm not sure if Mike was planning to testify or not, but he didn't tell me I could say anything, so I won't.
All right. Well, thank you, and we'll see if anybody else. I think, I think Mr. Dewey is signed up, so we'll let him speak for himself.
Thank you.
Any questions for these
gentlemen?
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You answer my question about the emergency clause.
That's my chicken.
Because I was going to ask why that was needed. So, thank you. Mr. Dewey, you haven't been up here in front of this committee without your chicken suit.
I haven't seen it with the chicken suit.
Thank or you. With the chicken suit. I know. We actually are going to ask you to come back with the chicken suit.
I won't be coming back with the chicken suit. It was hot. For the record, Mike Dewey, representing Waste Management, Inc., I appreciate Randy Eye Candy Tucker not speaking for me. I think he has a nickname now.
Does he look good in the chicken suit?
Waste Management supports this bill. In part because we have had conversations with Metro and the City of Portland. We operate landfills, collection facilities, and transfer stations primarily in the Tri-County metropolitan area. And there was discussion about diesel retrofits. We're having conversations internally about moving from that to compressed natural gas. We have a lot of collection vehicles. And we'd like to move in that direction because the greenhouse emissions are zero and the particulates are zero compared to retrofits. You're getting to the health effects, not necessarily on the greenhouse gas emissions. But nonetheless, we have an open market commercially in Portland. So if we move in that direction, it's more expensive. So we see this as an incentive for us to move in this direction. Otherwise, our competition may not do that. In the open market, it's competitive for the business side. And that means if our costs go up and we have to charge more, we may lose some customers. We're doing the right thing for the environment. So we like this bill because there may be a pot of money for us to access. So we support it. Metro has been very good to work with, and we are a member of Aura also. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
Okay, any questions for Mike Chicken Dewey here? Or
Chicken Mike.
Okay, we appreciate you coming forward.
And we did raise a lot of money for the food bank, by the way. Thank you.
Heck yeah, we really do appreciate that. All right, anybody else that would like to testify on House Bill 2671A? Okay, seeing none, I am going to close the public hearing on this. We're not going to have a work session at this point because there's an additional amendment that is possibly being considered. So we may or may not see that during work session. So I will close the public hearing in House Bill 2671A. Relating to solid waste. The chair has not seen it yet, so that's why. We may be back. DEQ and another party. Okay, so with that, we'll open up our last public hearing on House Bill 3063. that, and I can explain to you later.
Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 3063 has a no revenue or fiscal impact statement, changes the name of the Natural Heritage Program to Natural Areas Program, changes the name of Oregon Natural Heritage Plan to Oregon Natural Areas Plan, allows institutions in the Oregon University System, in addition to Oregon State University, to participate in the administration of the Institute for Natural Resources.
Okay. Thank you. And we have, is it Raleigh Montagna?
Montaigne.
Montaigne and Lisa Gaines.
Madam Chair, you actually pronounced it correctly, but the English made it Montaigne.
Yes, I did the correct. Okay, thank you. And if you could restate your name for the record so we get that right, and whoever wants to go first.
Sure, thank you. Senator Dingfelter, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lisa Gaines, and I'm the Associate Director of the Institute for Natural Resources from Oregon State University. I'm here with Raleigh Montaigne, Chairman of the Oregon Natural Heritage Advisory Council, to testify in support of House Bill 3063. I'd briefly like to provide some background on INR and explain why we promoted the changes proposed in this bill. INR is an Oregon University System Institute created by the legislature in 2001 in the Oregon Sustainability Act to provide access to expertise from the Oregon University System to the legislature and decision makers in Oregon. It was created to provide understandable and unbiased natural resource information to the same people. When INR was created, it was placed at Oregon State University, and the Oregon Natural Heritage Information Center moved to INR to become a critical part of our information program. One of the important changes made by House Bill 3063 is located on page 7, line 33, and it relates to our desire to transfer the Oregon Natural Heritage Information Center and the databases they manage to Portland State University from Oregon State University. The language creating INR requires that it, the institute, be managed by Oregon State University. The change we propose allows Oregon State University to also be managed by Portland State. I'm sorry, the Institute for Natural Resources to be managed by Portland State and or the University of Oregon, allowing us to take advantage of the faculty expertise in all institutions. The proposal to move the Heritage Information Center from OSU to PSU is simply a practical matter that works well for both institutions. The Heritage Information Center will remain a part of the Institute for Natural Resources and can provide a bridge to promote collaboration between state agencies, OSU, and PSU. The other change proposed in House Bill 3063 is to change the name of the Oregon Natural Heritage Program and the Oregon Natural Heritage Act to the Oregon Natural Areas Program and the Oregon Natural Areas Act. This change will be addressed in more detail in the testimony from Raleigh Montaigne. However, I was able to assist the Heritage Council in their 25-year review, and it was apparent from the comments of all stakeholders that clarifying the goals and objectives of the program and making it clear what it does would have important benefits. In particular, it would provide a better linkage to the Regional Federal Research Natural Areas Committee and Program and allow better integration between state and federal efforts, as well as those from adjacent states. The name also fits better with the Natural Areas Association, a national program created to provide a forum for state natural area programs, which happens to have its national meetings in Portland metro area this fall. I also wanted to mention that the Heritage Information Center staffs the work of the Oregon Natural Heritage Advisory Council and the Natural Heritage Program. Once the program is transferred to Portland State University, they will continue to provide the staff support to manage the renamed Natural Areas Program. Thanks for your time and attention, and I'm available to answer questions after Raleigh speaks, if not now. Thank you.
Why don't you go ahead? Thank you.
Chair Dingfelter, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Raleigh Montaigne. I'm chair of the Oregon Natural Heritage Advisory Council, which is a governor-appointed volunteer board that oversees the Natural Heritage Program. I'm here to testify on behalf of the council in support of House Bill 3063 and the minor technical changes it would make to the Oregon Natural Heritage Act of 1979. House Bill 3063 addresses two issues. Lisa Gaines has spoken to the portion of the bill that addresses the Institute for Natural Resources, or INR. I would like to address the portion of the bill that addresses the Natural Heritage Act. The proposed changes in the name of the program created by the Natural Heritage Act and plan described in the Act is proposed to change the name to the Natural Areas Program and the Natural Areas Plan. Based on a result of a program review conducted by the Council in 2006, The council recommended changing the name of the Natural Heritage Program and Oregon Natural Heritage Plan to the Oregon Natural Areas Plan and Oregon Natural Areas Program. The changes were deemed necessary to provide more clarity as to the work the program is providing and provide better linkages to the regional federal programs and those in adjacent states. Our program cooperates with the Federal Research Natural Area Committee, which has an identical goal of establishing a network of natural areas throughout Oregon to promote research and education and to assist in answering management questions. For these reasons, the Oregon Natural Heritage Advisory Council is supporting the proposed name changes. Now, we've provided much broader and greater information in the handouts rather than bog the committee down a long testimony today. So thank you for your time and the opportunity to present our views. And Lisa and I would be happy to try to address any questions you might have.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just from a practical point of view, and Ms. Gaines, you talked about moving stuff from Oregon State to PSU, mm-hmm. and there's no fiscal on this. And as soon as you move, are we talking about just data transfer? I mean, why is there no fiscal on this? Or are we really physically moving a bunch of things from one institution to the next?
It would be physically moving a bunch of things from one institute to the next. Our ORNHIC, the Oregon Natural Heritage Information Center, is currently located in Portland. Our staff is in Portland, but we are not at Portland State University, nor are we at an OSU facility. So it would be really transferring that group of individuals and their data to be located at Portland State University, and thus becoming Institute for Natural Resource staff and Portland State University staff.
Yeah, follow up. So we're not moving from Corvallis to Portland.
We're just moving
across the block or across town. Or
exactly.
River,
right? Moving across the river.
Right. Something closer. That's
yes.
why there's no fiscal. Got it. Understand.
Right.
Thank you.
And I have been to that office, and it's not... I mean, I've been to the office that it's in now, and I know you're very limited in space, and it's not really centrally located, let's put it that way. So,
and my point is it's PSU's limited, too.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yep. So it's a good question. Make sure we're not putting a burden also on the university system of this, especially on Portland State University with their limited funds.
Mm-hmm.
So other questions? Okay. Great. Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anybody else who would like to testify on House Bill 3063? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3063, and I will open up a work session on House Bill 3063.
Madam Chair, I'd move House Bill 3063 to the
floor
with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Atkinson moves House Bill 3063 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. And Senator Przanski, would you like to carry this bill?
Sure.
It's not U of O, but it's the university system. It's in your district. Okay, with that, we will close the work session on House Bill 3063, and we have a couple more work sessions to go. Wow, we're moving quite along here, which is good because Thursday is going to be a long day. Okay, so we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2583.
Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 2583, we heard this on the 5th, it prohibits launching the boats into waters of the state if the boat has any visible aquatic species that are detrimental to wildlife. The amendment that you heard at that time was the -2 amendment, and the committee had some changes that they suggested making. So the -3 amendment that you have in front of you incorporates the -2 amendment and changes it so that it's the prohibits the launching of a boat into the waters of the state if the boat has any visible aquatic species on its exterior hull or aquatic invasive species within interior parts of the boat. In addition, it requires the State Marine Board to provide information to the public about rules adopted by the Commission. And in the rules adopted by the State Fish and Wildlife Commission in consultation with the State Department of Agriculture, it authorizes them to adopt rules to allow the presence of certain aquatic species on or in a boat.
Okay, thank you. Beth, so you have the dash.
There is the -3, and we have a no revenue statement and a minimal expenditure impact statement, on the -3 amendment.
Okay, so we are in work session.
Madam Chair, move the -3s.
Okay. Senator Atkinson moves adoption of the -3s into House Bill 2583. Is there any discussion? Senator Boquist?
Madam Chair, just for comment, the reason we wanted to add the Marine Board in there for information, I, as a registered boat owner in the state, got the latest edition of the Marine Board's flyer, and of course in there is Stop Aquatic Hitchhikers. And it's this exact publication and the ability of the Marine Board to centralize the data information so the public knows what the rules are under one umbrella.
Okay, and I appreciate also your input on helping shape this amendment, so thank you for that. Any other comments or questions? Okay, seeing none, any objections? So the dash threes are adopted. I'll take another motion.
Madam Chair, I'd move House Bill 2583 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Atkinson moves House Bill 2583 to the floor as amended with the dash threes. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. And Senator Boquist,
delighted,
since you spent a lot of time on this amendment, would you like to carry it? Okay, thank you. With that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2583. And our last work session, I'll open up House Bill 2210.
Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 2210 removes the requirement that the two members appointed to represent public interest on the State Board of Agriculture are not actively involved in the agriculture industry. The committee had some questions surrounding that language, and so in front of you have the proposed -1 amendment, which requires that the governor appoint two board members who are not actively involved in the production of agricultural commodities to be representatives of the public interest. There is a no revenue or fiscal impact statement on this -1 amendment.
Okay, thank you, Beth.
Madam Chair.
Yes?
I need to excuse myself, but before I do so, I'd like to make a motion that we adopt the -1s in House Bill 2210.
Okay. Senator Przanski has made a motion to adopt the -1s in House Bill 2210. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2210 as amended by the -1s to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Przanski moves House Bill 2210 as amended with the -1s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections?
You know, I'm going to object. I'm not comfortable with this bill.
Okay. All right, so noted for the record. And
I was afraid he was concerned about the procedure that was just used, but it's the merits of the bill.
That Senator Atkinson is a no on this bill. Any other objections? Okay, seeing none, the bill carries. And Senator Hess, have you carried a bill today?
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll have Senator Hess carry this one. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2210. And we will close the Senate Energy, Environment and Natural Resources Committee. Members, Thursday will be a long committee hearing, so be prepared. Bring your pajamas.